to Psy.
Spend the day with Psy.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Psy's glory, his divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Psy's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Loving salutations at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Shri Sathya Sai Baba. The love of our lives, the wind beneath our wings, and the beat of our hearts. The one who is also the voice, the ears, the heart and soul of Radio Psy. Psy Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Thursday Live. You are tuned to our Asia stream coming to you from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual epicenter of the universe. My name is Karuna and I thank you for staying with Radio Psy on Thursday, January the 29th, 2015. Weather conditions in Prashanthi Nilayam this week call for clear skies, overnight lows in the late teens, and daytime highs in the 30 to 32 degrees Celsius range. Given the pleasant breeze, it feels very comfortable these days to move around during the day, except when your car is parked in the midday sun for a while. Well, on that bright and sunny note, I'm happy to inform you that today I have lined up for you a mega dose of fleeting moments, lasting memories. First, we will continue our live from the studio in-house Fleeting Moments interview with my colleague, Brother Arvind Balasubramanya. And this will be followed by another fresh episode of Fleeting Moments Lasting Memories by my colleague, Brother Bishu Prushti. Bishu recently interviewed an engineer, Mr. H.S.D. Srinivas, who completed his MBA at the Psy University and has attended a leadership program at Harvard. He has served the Sri Sathya Sai Super Specialty Hospital for over 15 years. Currently, Mr. H.S.T. Srinivas works for the Reliance Foundation in Mumbai. I am confident you will enjoy this interview immensely, and at Team Radio Psy, we look forward to your feedback to both Bishu's interview with Brother H.S.T. Srinivas and my live from the studio, that is my ongoing discussion, my in-house fleeting moments conversation, today being part two, with Radio Psy's very own Arvind Balasubramanya. So let me welcome my guest first, Psy Ram Arvind, and thank you for joining me once again for the second installment of our ongoing conversation.
Psy Ram Didi, and as always, it is a privilege and a pleasure.
Great. Now, Arvind, before I pose my first question to you, I'd like to give you an opportunity to recall and just recap for us the thought that you had on your mind when we concluded the conversation last week. I'd asked you to hold that thought and complete the story about your wedding and, you know, getting the picture of your to-be wife cleared from Swami.
Oh, yes. As I said, on the 17th of November, Bhagwan told me that if you had got your girl on this day, I would have got you married. That is when, you know, I began to seriously think that Swami is hinting towards the wedding. Before that, in the September of the same year, we had this Sai Sannidhi boys, that is all the alumni who are working in Swami's institutions, sit along with their parents in Purnachandra auditorium when Swami moved around and blessed everyone. That was the time when Swami suddenly pointed to me and told my father that it's time to get him married. So he told the same to my mother. At that time I thought, you know, Swami was making a light banter or, you know, cracking a joke. That's what Swami usually cracks a joke, that manner. But when this happened 2 months later, I thought, you know, now Swami is seriously looking towards it. You know, in retrospect, it feels so poignant because that is what I had prayed to Swami. Either when you leave, either make me a yogi or give me somebody who will love me in part like how you do. And since I had no idea about Swami's departure, all this in retrospect makes a lot of sense. So things so happened that suddenly, Pooja's parents had begun to look out for grooms for her, and in a funny twist of events, not knowing that what I had experienced towards her, they even showed me the pictures of some of the eligible grooms and asked whether they would be good for her daughter. And I was thinking that, you know, auntie, uncle, I'm here sitting right in front of you. But I didn't dare say that. In a sudden twist of events, it was Pooja who one day called me and she said that my parents are looking out for a match for me. And she dropped the bombshell. She said that if at all I want somebody to spend my entire life with, it is with you. Are you ready? I was like totally taken aback.
Quite a role reversal, huh?
Exactly. I really didn't expect this. So I told her that just hold on, you know, hold on to that thought. Let me go out of the studio. And I wanted to talk to her on the phone. She had called me. All this was happening over the telephone. And then she just put two conditions. She said one condition is that please let's not get married for 1 year because I would like to wrap up everything in Bombay. I said, why you want to wrap up everything in Bombay? She said, you know, there's something I have to confess to you, Arvind. Just remember that you will never be the first priority in my life. So I was thinking, okay. Then she said, because that has been given to Swami. That is when she told that. I was so thrilled. And there, she said, therefore, I cannot think of pulling you away from Swami where he has kept you at Radio Sai. So without a doubt, I'm going to quit my job and come to Puttaparthi. There's no question of a long distance relationship or about you coming out from Parthi. So once this was done, it followed the traditional path. She told it to her parents. Her parents came to my parents and everybody was happy. And I thought, let me inform this to Swami. It was the 6th of January and I was seated in the front there. And Swami at the end of the bhajan session looks towards me and asks, what news? And in my hand was this letter about all these happenings. I went to him and not sure what Swami had asked. I just said, Swami, the sports meet practices are on. The students from Anandpur, Brindavan, everybody has come here. It will be wonderful if sometime you can just do a drive past in your car, Swami. They will all get encouraged. Swami said, okay, what other news? And when Swami asked what other news, I said, Swami, one more news is there, but I want to tell it to you personally. So I went on to the dais, went to his ear and I whispered. And I said, Swami, my parents have selected and are happy with a girl whose parents have come and sought my hand in marriage. The minute I said the word marriage, Swami loudly said it out. Marriage in Telugu. Pedli.
So much for secrecy.
the whole block in front of him, everybody heard it, and I could already see the whispers going on, you know, hey, he's getting married, he's getting married, he's getting married. And I just told Swami, you should perform the wedding. Swami said, okay, he asked for the photograph of the girl. So now I went back and I was very happy that this had happened. And the next project was to get a photograph of Pooja. Now I had my own particulars. I had my own conditions. How the photograph must be presented. And since she was working in Deutsche Bank, I checked all her recent photographs. They were all of her in shirt and trousers because that is the dress code there. And in staying in Bombay, which is sultry, at the same time, which is a modern city, she did not have any photographs of her in a sari. And even if they were there, they were not like a kind of a bride photograph. I mean, her hair neatly combed with that bunch of flowers in her hair. That is the typical bride photograph that I wanted. So this was the thing, and I told my mother that if I have to take a photograph of Pooja, it has to be according to the specifications. So that was when, you know, we decided that I would go on a 2-day trip to Bombay. I had borrowed a silk sari from Pooja's mother who stays in Puttaparthi, so that she could wear that sari and the picture could be taken. And that day during darshan when Swami came, I thought I will tell him that I'm going to Bombay, but I thought I will leave it at that. Why to go into details? And so I just got up and said, Swami, 2 days I'm going to Bombay for a holiday. That is what I said. Swami immediately said, not holiday, you're going to see your girl.
And a photo shoot too.
And then he added that. He said, show me the photograph.
Oh, wow.
So I said, yes, Swami, I will get the photograph. That is what happened. I went to Bombay, and it was in Bombay, when I was in Bombay, that I got a phone call which told me about how for 2 days in a row Swami had not come for darshan. And the third day when he had come, apparently Swami looked very weak. That's what they said. This was the January end, 2011. And when I returned from Mumbai and I was sitting there, I had got the photographs. I had got them printed and it was ready with me. And the day when I saw Swami looked so weak, I thought, you know, let me not tell him about all this wedding and all this. Or let Swami recover. There's a lot of time. Because anyway, Pooja said that we had agreed that the marriage would be only after 1 year. That was what we had just thought, because she could wrap up her things at Deutsche Bank. As I was seated there, Swami is going on looking at me, but he also didn't beckon or call me. I had the letter in my hand. I also didn't try to thrust the letter. I said, it's fine. But you know, in retrospect again, it was Swami's love. Those days his voice had become feeble and weak, and he waited for the Samastha Loka to get over so that there would be absolute silence in the hall, and then he called. I realized that he had not called me so long, not because he didn't want to interact, but because he wanted everything to be silent so that I could understand what he's speaking. So as soon as he looked at me, he asked, when is the marriage? I went and told him, Swami, you should only perform the marriage. And then Swami made a statement that makes so much meaning today. He said, no, I will not do it. Do as per your plan, it is good. And as of then, the only plan was, we do it after 1 year. So I said, no, Swami, you should do it. Swami said, hey, no, I won't. I didn't know for what. Today I know why. But anyway, I wanted to change the topic. So I said, Swami, I have got her picture. Would you like to see? Swami said, yes, get it to me. And the minute I gave him the photograph, the first thing he says is, for the sake of the photograph, you made her wear a sari, right? Swami said. And then I said, yes, Swami. And then he started pointing something to her hair. I was not able to understand, and then Swami explained. I had made her actually stand before a coconut tree in very wonderful environs. That photograph is still with me, so that it looks very, very aesthetic. And Swami points out to the coconut tree branches and he says, see how the leaves are hanging from the branch. Like that only her hair is hanging out. You know, she had a little short hair.
It was sticking out on the side.
Yes. So he pointed to that. So usually, you know, I have noticed that when Swami does not like something, he does not say no. Swami never says no. He just points out a few mistakes, and you should understand that Swami does not like it. And I felt, oh my God, is Swami pointing out mistakes? So, you know, I just bit my tongue in a very involuntarily. I just bit my tongue like, oh my God, is this happening or not? Swami observed that, and immediately his eyes opened up wide and he patted the photograph thrice saying, no, I bless, I bless, I bless. You know, that was how our wedding got fixed. And in fact, going on later, even the wedding date, Swami came in the dream. This actually, we got engaged before Swami left physically. But after that, when we realized that Swami had left physically, we were praying for a date, and a date came up, a debate was going on. Swami, I won't go into these details, but Swami simultaneously came in the dream of Pooja as well of another of her classmates on the same morning. Both of them had the same dream in which Swami fixed the date as 3rd of February. That is how the wedding date got fixed, and today I realize how, as I have acknowledged in that second book of mine, Pooja is my little Swami at home, because at times when she speaks, I really remember Swami speaking. So even on that front, Swami has kept up his promise. After he has physically left also, he has given me a small part of himself, which reminds me of him every day.
Mm-hmm. That's a very blessed story indeed. Now, Arvind, many people would think that you're quite a multitasker. You work full-time in the studio, in the mandir, shooting. You give a lot of talks in the satsang building. You blog. You are very active in the indoor stadium every evening. You play tennis and whatever. And you're a family man. And you travel extensively. Now, how has Sai Education trained you to manage your time efficiently to handle all these?
In Swami School and Institute, I learned a very important lesson about multitasking. Multitasking does not mean doing 10 things at the same time by dividing your focus among 10 different activities. We often think that is what multitasking is, but multitasking that way is sure to lead to failure. It was in Swami's university, because, you know, we are part of a self-reliance department. Apart from that, we have cultural programs that we put up in the mandir. We have our sports and games, which are compulsory. At the same time, we have our academics. There are so many things that we are doing at the same time. So everyone is forced to multitask. But that is where we learnt what is actual multitasking. Actual multitasking is allotting times to different things, but 100% focus on that. It is not as if in all my time I'm doing 10 things, dividing 10% focus, 10% focus, 10% focus.
You'll be diffused completely with
yes.
that.
Yes. Instead of that, I work for half an hour on my academics with 100% focus. At that time, no other thought comes in my head. Then I shift over to my speech or my dramatics, and there I give 100% of myself. So the time, the quantity of time is not important, the quality of time is important. And I feel it is this lesson of 100% focus multitasking. Multitasking where you do different tasks, but do each task one at a time.
Very
with
thorough.
All the focus, get it done with, and then move on to the other without distractions from your other task when you're doing a single task. That helps us achieve, and I feel that if we do this, easily any one of us can multitask day-to-day life. The only problem is when we are doing task A, we have thoughts of task B and task C coming in, which ruin our task A. So, yoga karmasu kaushalam. Yoga is perfection in action, and perfection in action comes only with 100% focus on that action, and that is what I have learned from the stay in the hostel. That's what I use in daily life also.
Makes a lot of sense. That's great. Now, through all this attention that you receive as a much sought after person, is it a challenge for you to keep your ego in check and not get carried away by all the limelight and the attention?
Definitely. Definitely. And I have had so many instances where, you know, Didi, the thing is when you get egoistic, whether others get to know or not, definitely you know from inside. That is what I have seen. And when such things happen, as I said, this is where Pooja's role comes. She is the one who can be absolute frank with me, and she directly tells me, she says, this is not good for you. And I know that she has only love for me and my good at heart. So when she tells that, what I do is all these sources of ego for me, which is my blog, my talking, my whatever, for a period of 1 or 2 days, I just cut off everything. I just say, no, I cannot, because I don't deserve, because I know people don't come to listen to me speak. It is because Swami speaks that people get inspired. If I speak, it will be useless. I know it for sure. And so therefore, in those 2 days when I am feeling that I am doing everything and I am feeling awesome, it's better to take off, because if you go ahead, you're going to be a sure failure. Sometimes this is one check. I do it, I sit and I pray. And Didi, let me confess that almost twice or thrice a month, because of this, I sit and cry in my altar, telling Swami, please protect me. I don't know. A strong mind is a valuable asset and a super servant. But once it becomes a master, it's very dangerous. So protect me, save me. And when at times my wife is not able to recognize, or I am not able to recognize, or my parents are not able to recognize, it's like this Japanese concept of pokayoke. In Japan, for example, they observed that there's a chopping machine. Where all the workers were getting their fingers and all chopped because of not being careful. So they devised a method where you keep what has to be chopped in the machine, and there's a button on your left and a button on your right. You have to press both buttons, then only the machine chops. So unless you've got a third hand, there's no way you can chop your hand. So that's called pokayoke, where by default you can't commit an error. And I feel Swami has got a pokayoke when it comes to ego. If by chance nobody observes and it escapes, you will go and make a big fool of yourself. I have had that happen to me. Where your jokes don't elicit laughter, where you don't get claps, and you feel like such a fool, after speaking about Swami also, you don't feel joy in the heart. Then what is the purpose? We do everything for joy in the heart, and it feels so, so terrible that you want to keep away from ego for your own happiness sake. So that happens where it has happened several times where I go bust a big flop, and at such times I withdraw, I start praying, and again, immediately Swami does that, because Swami's lesson is so implicit that the minute you learn it, he instantly allows you to get back to your former self. And at that time I remind myself that no, this is not praise for you, this is for Swami. A beautiful example that our colleague Prem gives, he says, imagine God, you are a balloon in God's hand. He blows you. If you get bloated, you better have the holes of humility all around you. If you don't have, you get bloated, and when the Lord lets go of you, you fly far away. You go away from the Lord. Your ego makes you go away from the Lord, unless you have the holes of humility. If you have the holes of humility, as the Lord pumps into you, you let out the air, and then you're deflated. When the Lord lets go of you, you fall straight to His feet only. You don't go away from the Lord. So therefore, it is definitely a challenge, but Swami's love is there to take care. And whenever, it's not about not falling, but about rising every time we fall and realizing that error and correcting it.
Well said. It's nice to know, refreshing to know that you're such a good self-monitor. Arvind, you've made a conscious decision to settle down in Puttaparthi, of course, with the willing cooperation of your wife and your parents. And this is a huge investment of your youth, of your parents' savings, everything, because you made home in this village. As a young person who has had a very good academic record, don't you feel this decision of yours limits your playing field in terms of the material success you could have achieved, or the fame you could have achieved, or the seva opportunities, or the rise within the Sai organization?
I think I referred to this in the last week's interview, but it is like I used to feel this. And I told it to Swami also. In fact, when I joined, I told Swami also, Swami, I wish to get married, I wish to achieve success, I wish to do all this, and Swami, by your grace, I have got a brilliant mind. I can do it, Swami, but Swami, I love you more than anything else. All said and done, Swami, you are my strength, you are my weakness also. I mean, I don't mind losing anything else for your sake. So I am sacrificing all this for you. This is exactly how I felt when I joined Radio Sai and started working. But 7 years down the journey, really today I feel I have not sacrificed anything, Didi. I can cross my heart and say that the name and fame I have got today is entirely because of Swami, and I definitely can say with all my skills and talents, I wouldn't have achieved 1/4 of this had I gone out. Mm-hmm. So everything I feel I have been conferred to more. It's a myth that we sacrifice for Swami. I don't think I've lost out on anything. I have in fact gained much more. People outside may think that I'm losing out on something. What I feel is, whatever you achieve without God, I can achieve with God. But what I can achieve with God, you can't achieve without God.
Very well said. Now, about your decision to live in Parthi and work in Radio Sai, what is the best part of the experience?
The best part of the experience, again, I'll be repeating myself when I say, to do something that my heart longs to do, that my heart relishes and enjoys doing, and get paid for it also. Usually it so happens that people have two things. One, what they have to do to earn a living, and then what they do so that they enjoy life. By God's grace, it has so happened that my living and life have come together as this, and therefore I'm so, so happy. That's the best thing about working for Radio Sai, working at Radio Sai.
And living in Parthi. So, but between the two, living in Parthi and working for Radio Sai, what's the hardest?
The hardest is, Didi, like, you know, every time you introduce your show, you welcome everyone by saying, welcome to the spiritual epicenter of the universe. That is something that we have to keep in mind, that Puttaparthi, Prashanthi Nilayam, Radio Sai, is a place where you get benefited spiritually. The hardest thing is, on every other front, you seem to be losing. People often come for 2 days to Prashanthi Nilayam, 3 days or 10 days to Prashanthi Nilayam and say, this is heaven on earth, this is fantastic. I would like to say it is fantastic and heaven on earth when you come here for a vacation of a week. Stay here for a year, you will realize that it's a mini world in itself. There are all kinds of hardships, pains, everything is there. And it will also look like, you know, you will sometimes feel that I could have had this better if I was in Bangalore. I could have had this better if I was in Germany. Yes, on every front there are 100 other places on earth which can provide for you better than Puttaparthi and Prashanthi Nilayam can. But there's one thing that other places can't provide as good as this, which I feel is spirituality. And so therefore, the challenge is, all of us who have decided to stay here, that's what I believe, have decided to stay here for spiritual reasons. To keep ourselves focused on the spiritual goals is the greatest challenge, because it might happen, because Puttaparthi is now having all the comforts, conveniences, we have television, we have internet, everything is fantastic. So we get exposed to the outer world, we often get tempted, and the syndrome of grass being greener on the other side. But the challenge lies in realizing that we are here for spiritual uplift, for nothing else. And that is what I feel is tough about being in Parthi. But other than that, when you're in sync that I'm here for spiritual uplift, that I'm getting, life is so smooth, life is beautiful, extremely happy. I can't ask for anything else.
So I guess keeping your goal in mind. Now, you know, listening to young people like yourselves, I know that we get a lot of excellent feedback to the programs that all of you do here in Radio Sai, yourself, Prem, Vishu, CG, Chandu. We notice that a lot of young professionals, you know, they salivate and they say, oh, this seems like such a dream life you have. You guys have jobs and you live in a beautiful place like Puttaparthi. How we wish we could come and settle here, because they imagine, their perspective is that it's an idyllic life. You're doing a job, you have morning, evening bhajan, you go to the mandir, And things inside the ashram are very smooth and easy in the sense that we don't have chaos, traffic, congestion.
Mm.
With Swami's grace, we are crime-free inside the walls of the ashram.
Mm.
And so it's a great life to live. Now, what advice would you give such people who always dream of living this life? And also many people, as you mentioned, they express, you know, I came for 10 days, I loved it, I wish I could live here. I often feel like asking them, why don't you?
Why don't you have the courage to take the leap?
Yeah, why don't you? Who's stopping you? Except yourself.
Mm.
But those who see it from outside, as you said, they have the grass is greener on the other side syndrome. What advice would you give them?
The same, similar kind of answer what I said to the previous question. Please come and settle in Prashanthi Nilayam and Puttaparthi, but only if your goal is spiritual. If you're coming to Prashanthi Nilayam because you feel there is no traffic, it's only a matter of time, you never know. I thought, you know, there were some who came and said, it's fantastic here, there's a super bazaar nearby, everything is available close by, I don't need to go. And suddenly we have water problems. There's no groundwater, you have to purchase water. And you say, oh my God, what a mistake I made. If you came here because it's convenient, then you're going to find it sad. If you come to Prashanthi Nilayam or Puttaparthi for any reason other than spiritual reasons, you are bound to get disappointed sometime or the other. 100% it's going to happen. Oh my God, you know, if I have to see one movie, I have to travel all the way to Bangalore. You know, I'm just giving different things that you will come across, you know, come up with. And then you will say, oh God, you know, Puttaparthi is good if you come as a visitor. Otherwise, there's a lot of politics here. People speak like this. There are some, you start seeing defects. You will start seeing so many defects. Once you start getting familiar in Prashanthi Nilayam, and you'll wonder, is this the magical world that I appreciated? I'm sure different people who have stayed for different periods would have had different such flashes of enlightenment. But then, one thing that is sure, you know, as a foundation to all this is, even though whatever may be happening at the surface, at the bottom, in the depth, there is a phenomenal spiritual progress happening. And if my first priority in life is spiritual progress, then only I should come to Prashanthi Nilayam. And if my, first priority in life is spiritual progress, then only will I have the courage necessary to make the leap to come and settle here. Because, you know, people say, I would love to come here, but I've got children, what about their education? There's a school here. I know, but you know, how there are not enough facilities. Let them study outside. So you see, spiritual, it's an entire package. If your first priority is this is the only advice I have. If your first priority is spirituality, then alone come. Otherwise, Puttaparthi is definitely bound to disappoint you. Because for any other parameter, worldly, materialistic, career,
comfort,
for anything, there are 100 other places on earth which are better. But I really feel this is the spiritual epicenter. No place like Prashanthi Nilayam if your first priority, and even wonderful, if the only priority in life is spirituality, then it's magical.
And I also get quite amused when people praise the education system or students, but they don't think it's good enough for their children.
That is sheer hypocrisy. In fact, I was speaking the other day to Professor Mukundan, and he was speaking about how in a Sai school there, they have very few children who are boarding. It's a day scholar school.
Yeah.
But among the boarding children, most of them are children of the district presidents of Kerala. I felt this is fantastic.
What an endorsement.
Yes, the district presidents feel that our child should go and stay in the school in the boarding over there.
Although they live in the same state and they could keep them in the fancy private school and be day scholars.
Exactly. You know, these are the kind of leaders I feel great appreciation and great regard for. You know, because they walk their talk, what they think, what they speak and what they do in their daily life shows. So therefore, you know, there are two kinds of people I feel who come to Prashanthi and Swami. One kind of people are seeking the world, and association with Swami and association with Prashanthi Nilayam helps them achieve greater things in the world. So they use Swami and the organization to enhance their worldly glory and worldly fame and name. They get power, they get influence, they get whatever. So that is one category. The other category is they seek only Swami. And therefore, they use the world in order to go closer to Swami. So, if you are of the latter category, that you want Swami at any cost and you don't mind losing or using anything else in life so that you can get Swami, then come to Prashanthi Nilayam. If you are of the first category, then you are bound to get disappointed. Because it so happens, this distinction is very subtle. It can happen anytime that we shift. We come with the aim of getting Swami, but we come for Swami's heart, but we are amazed by the wonders of His hand. We know the power of His name. See, today when each one of us goes outside, we are working in Radio Sai just as sincerely as any other radio jockey working in any other radio station. But while people may give a cursory glance to the other radio jockeys, we get salutes and people almost fall at our feet. So you see, in a sense, it gives a lot of, you know, worldly power and glory. But if I am trying to achieve that via Swami, then Prashanthi Nilayam is going to be a big disappointment for me, because sometime or the other the bubble is going to burst. So the only reason we should come here is if our intentions are spiritual and nothing else.
Very well said. Very wise beyond your years. Well, Arvind, I want to thank you once again for agreeing to this in-house, live from the studio, Fleeting Moments interview. And we have done two parts, and I'm hoping at a later time we'll do a third one.
Sure, Didi. Thank you. As always, it's a pleasure and privilege. Sai Ram.
Appreciate your candor very, very much. And I think so will our listeners.
Thank you.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Dear listeners, that brings me to the final dose of inspiration for you this morning. I will now play for you part one of my colleague, Brother Bishop Rushdie's Fleeting Moments interview with Mr. H.S.T. Srinivas. And I urge you to please send in your feedback to this interview, as well as my just concluded live conversation with Radio Sai's Arvind Balasubramanya. And as I sign off, I wish you a wonderful, Sai-some, awesome day ahead. Till we meet next Thursday, please be well, keep seeking, and do whatever it takes to stay inspired. Jai Sai Ram.
Tune in to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, our series of conversations with former students of Bhagwan's educational institutions. And today I have with me a tall figure. Yes, tall figure literally as well as figuratively, Mr. H.S.D. Srinivas. I remember as him as a tall figure because I remember when I joined the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences, after finishing my post-graduation, the inaugural session that we had in the hospital was when Dr. Safaya, the director of the hospital, spoke to us, and he told us at that time that if we have to learn how we should conduct ourselves in the hospital, or how, with what proficiency and efficiency we should deliver in the hospital, he had told us that we should look up to Brother H.S.D. Srinivas. So that is how I always remember him. And for those of us who have passed out of Bhagwan's institutions and who have been here for quite some time, he's a very familiar figure. He's someone who had the opportunity of not only contributing immensely to Bhagwan's healthcare mission in terms of being one of those students who joined the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences when it started in 1991. He was there in the hospital for 15 years, and he set up the cath lab, the catheterization lab, and many other things. I don't know all the details, but I definitely know that he was one of those pillars of the hospital who had contributed tremendously to the initial setting up of this beautiful oasis of healthcare in the wilderness, in the remote hamlet of Puttaparthi. And he joined Bhagwan's institutions only for his management in 1989 for his master's in business administration. And as soon as he finished this in 1991, Bhagwan gave him the opportunity to work in the super speciality hospital. Prior to this, he had done his engineering in Hyderabad in Osmania University. And in the year 2005, by divine design, Brother Srinivas moved on to an organization called EMRI, which is Emergency Management and Research Institute, which does the kind of work which 911 does in the US is basically an emergency healthcare management system. It's a service, healthcare emergency service. And when brother joined this organization, it was in its nascent stage. They were serving about, you know, 50 lakh people, perhaps. That's how it all started. And then he served in this organization for 6 to 7 years, and by the time he had to move out from here, they had nearly 4 million people in 12 states, 400 million people in 12 states were covered by this program, EMRI 108 program. In fact, you are in Puttaparthi anytime, and you probably might have seen those 108 ambulances. There are so many occasions when I have been in the general hospital, and you know, I would see a 108 ambulance coming in with a patient who needs immediate attention, and seen that any number of times. And you know, you are always so happy that you know there is a system here, which is not service organization. I mean, in terms of which is a public-private partnership organization, but it is doing so well. You always felt so happy that, you know, sometimes when things don't go so well in a country like India, but this was one organization, you always felt so happy because, you know, especially in rural areas, when there was a health emergency, you would find that this ambulance is there and the patient and getting the attention, medical attention in time. So this is a lovely public private partnership going on in India, and brother was had the opportunity to sort of spearhead this and take it to a new level. After this, he had the opportunity to do a leadership program in Harvard Business School in the year 2011, and during this time he also joined the L.V. Prasad Eye Institute, where he worked for some time. And after that, he was invited by Reliance Foundation. After that, he moved on to Reliance Foundation, where he continues to do his service in the healthcare area, and that is where his heart is. And as you can see, he has always engaged himself in those institutions which are of non-governmental nature, largely non-governmental nature, and which are into service, which are into healthcare service, you know, which are into making difference in people's lives, which are not so not so much corporate on endeavors, but which are institutions which have as their core to somehow reach out and make a difference in people's lives. And given that his experience and expertise is in healthcare, and that is where he has concentrated, and he has gone ahead and got a degree also, which gives him a larger understanding of the whole thing, as well as more credibility and opportunities and a bigger platform to go by his heart's call. And all this training that he has he received here under Bhagwan's guidance, studying under Bhagwan and working under him, it's all going now to society in different forms, to bigger platforms. And we really would want to know more about how it has happened, and how staying here has shaped him, and how after he has moved out, how he had seen the cascading effect of what he has learned here. And before I move on and, you know, request brother to start his reminiscing about his days in Prashantinam, because that is from where we will begin, I must also mention, which is very important, is brother is someone who had also the very, very precious opportunity, absolutely unparalleled and very, very rare opportunity, to actually serve Bhagwan at very close quarters. He had the chance to physically serve Bhagwan in his residence for more than a decade. And that is a privilege and an opportunity and a great blessing. And that's also the reason why he's such a tall figure. So with great happiness, brother, I welcome you to the studios of Radio Sai.
Thank you so much. I am really honored that I am here and being asked to share some of my experiences. But for Sai, but for Swami, I don't think any of us would even be in this kind of a stage of life, or where, you know, we'd be able to share some of the beautiful experiences. So it's whatever has been shaped, whatever good fortune I've had, whatever little joy, happiness that I could share with others, it's all because of the lovely touch, the grace that He has showered on us. And if there are any faults, they are mine. Please forgive me for that.
Wow. I remember Swami Vivekananda on one occasion when he was speaking to an audience after he returned from the US, I guess. He said, "If I have told you anything which has touched you and inspired you, it is from my master. And if I have told you anything which did not inspire you, then it is from me."
Well, I guess that's a feeling I'm sure each one of us would share. Because but for His touch, we would have remained rocks. And He ensured that we come alive. We feel the world with our hearts. So, and that's the greatest blessing I would have got from Him, that you really understood why we should lead a life, or what is it that is worth pursuing in life. Of course, I wouldn't say I lived up to all the expectations of a lot of people, but whatever I am today, it's 100% because of the grace that He bestowed. And I'm sure this is the sense each one of us, those who have gone through the portals of the institute here, this is a very sacred institute. And today is a double blessing for me, because exactly 23 years ago, on this day, I started my career.
Wow.
So 22nd November happens to be the anniversary day for Satya Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences.
Oh, yes. Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yes. So I was 23 years old there. So 23.
Oh, yes. Today is November 22nd, and it is the hospital anniversary day.
Absolutely.
Right?
So,
wow.
So that's the reason why it's a double blessing. I mean,
yes.
Coincidences don't happen simply like that.
Absolutely. Coincidences are those occasions when God chooses to be anonymous, they say. There are only coincidences. There are no coincidences. I think for us, we know. Oh yeah, it's really amazing. I never actually thought about it, you know. This is happening. I'm so happy that, you know, we are having this conversation. You are someone who are so much part of the hospital. I mean, you've contributed to every brick and wall of the hospital. I mean, you can feel that, isn't it, whenever you go to the hospital?
Absolutely. Like, just today I was there and reminiscing each of the moments, countless moments that we spent there over the, you know, over a period of almost 14 years I was there. And every single moment was a blessing. When you see that this is an institution which is unparalleled in history, the way they say, na bhuto na bhavishyat. I don't think you will get one more Satya Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences anywhere in the world. You wouldn't have found any such instance in history. I doubt if we can recreate something like that again in future. It's a temple of healing built with love. And I remember the occasion when Colonel Jogarao Garu was very, very worried when you know, Swami had taken all of us to Kodaikanal. That was immediately after our MBA in 91. 6 months prior to that, Swami had made the announcement that I'm going to build a hospital here for the poor. It's going to be a 100 crore project. And in April, May of 1991, nothing has moved. No, except for that, on November 22nd, Swami had given His word and started a Bhumi Pujan. So Kanajogara was almost on a daily basis pestering Swami in Kodaikanal that Swami, you have given a major word. I know it will come true, but...
And you were there,
I was witnessing all this. I was witnessing, of course, along with 30-40 of us,
yes,
who were fortunate enough to be there for that 1 month long.
You had finished your management.
I had finished my MBA, and what Swami had taken about a group of 40 students.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a privilege, again, something which all of us look forward to when we join MBA. It's only because, you know, those days MBA students were supposed to automatically go to Kodaikanal.
Yeah, a seat in MBA meant a passport to Kodaikanal.
Unfortunately, we didn't have that in 1990.
Okay.
So everybody was worried ki, you know, the tradition of 3 years has been broken. So,
yeah.
Fortunately, in 91 when this happened, and so amongst daily spats we used to have with Colonel Jogara was his grouse that you guys are holding back, Swami. Do you know what? He has given his word to the mankind that he's going to build a hospital, and because of you guys, he's stuck in... Kodaikanal, nothing's moving, nothing's happening, and he used to fret and fume a little bit.
But I think he had good reasons. Like, it was 5-6 months, it's already like May, November, the institution has
absolutely
to come.
Absolutely, and I don't think anybody who in their right senses would think that in 6 months anything like whatever Swami promised would come about. Swami was cool. Swami was...
You have seen that, right? Swami was cool?
Absolutely. He was totally in his, orbit, so to say, corporate world.
Yes.
But he was very... He was carrying on every day without anything. So he used to increase that angst in Colonel Jogarao.
I mean, if you think about it, isn't it like so amazing? I mean, he's given a word, he's going to start a hospital in 1 year, and 6 months has passed and he's in Kodaikanal and he's having a time.
Absolutely.
He's giving you so much time.
Absolutely.
Joking with you.
And daily he was inquiring, so what did you have for lunch? What are you going to do for your breakfast? Have you taken your rounds around the Kodai Lake? Generally, you know, preparing the students for the next role in their in the life. So the tension was rising on a daily basis, and it was during those days that Mr. Keith Critchlow came along and he showed one of the designs. I didn't know that there were so many other designs already considered but discarded. But this happened to catch Swami's attention, and he said, yes, this is the design I want for my hospital. And it was a beautiful design of, Keith Critchlow was the architect who designed,
yes,
for the Buckingham Palace. And he designed a institution which is, which literally brings everybody together. If you look at the structure, it's kind of two arms calling people to come forth.
Embracing. Yes.
Right? So, and in his typical style, he had brought a map with design for a 24 feet kind of huge halls and that type of thing. So, Swami took a look at it. He said, I like all these things, but who's going to clean at 24 feet? So make it 14 feet.
Oh, okay.
So that's how it was. From a single floor, it became a double floor kind of, a ground floor plus...
Okay. Originally, it was just one floor?
One floor. That was the design.
Okay.
Swami said, who's going to clean it? In his own typical way. Maybe it was always in Swami's mind.
Yeah.
But so it so happened that all the outpatient services were designed in the ground floor.
Yes.
And all the inpatient services were designed in the first floor. So I remember, design is approved, but what next, you know? So he used to, so Colonel Jogarao one of those days actually joked with Swami, why don't you give me 1/2 kg gold, I will go sell it, then raise some money, and then, you know, we'll start off. Swami was like, what is it, Jogarao, why are you, if I can give you gold, I can as well give you the money, right? So it
did
was,
say
yeah, of course,
oh my God.
If I can give gold, why can't I give you money? And he just picked up, he said, okay. So after playing around like this for a few days, he just picked up one of the envelopes. He said, take that envelope. And there was some check with some money to start with and all. He said, go ahead. and the money will start
flowing.
This
is like one of them which has come during darshan time.
Correct.
Oh
and
my God.
He just said, you pick this up, go ahead and start the work. And of course, I remember another incident a few months before that when Swami had announced this. One of the school students had saved some money and he gave an envelope to Swami. Swami came in the middle of all the students and then he opened that envelope and told all of us, you know what this schoolboy has done? For the last 4 months, he did not use the services of a dhobi. He washed his own clothes and saved some money and then this is what he has given me to start the hospital.
Wow.
He has written a very beautiful letter, the young student, I don't remember the name or anything, but then it was very, very touching and inspiring when we heard that some boy had thought like this and, you know, thought that this is what I can also contribute. Since Swami said, I will raise my hospital on these 20 rupees or 30 rupees. That was it.
Swami said that.
And he told something, you know, I don't recall the exact words, but these were the effect.
Wow.
So it was like, so all of us in Kodaikanal at that time, we were confident that nothing's going to go wrong and things will fall in place. Of course, and then once we came back in May, there was a big meeting of a lot of doctors who came from Delhi and there were about 30 to 40 of them in Vrindavan. Swami was speaking to all of them and he just started the meeting. He said, okay, you guys discuss. And he called all the students into the next room and then he started discussing. He was giving interview to all of us.
Oh.
So it was like all the time that Swami's kind of telling that, you know what Krishna showed to Arjun, that everything is done. You are only enacting the roles.
Hmm.
So in his mind, in his vision, in his design, when he announced the hospital, it is done. It has been created.
Yes.
It was only for all of us as actors to feel that, okay, you know, what next? We need to do something. Okay, we need to do this, A, B, C, D, E. So, therefore. But Swami was that embodiment of godliness, you know, who's already in his vision, he has created it and it is there. It only needs to come to life in a few days. So it was a lesson. It was one of the hundreds of lessons he was teaching us.
And this feeling, are you getting now or even then you used to get this feeling?
See, we all, how do we say, as students, as someone who would have spent at least 2-3 years in the mandir on a daily basis, seen Swami, you know, understood his ways, or at least seen the way he was working, we never had any doubts. I guess even Karna Jogarao had never any doubts that anything is going to, you know, not happen. It was only that we were probably curious how it's going to happen. Otherwise, I don't think the naysayers were there, plenty of them. I don't think any of us in the student community or those who knew Swami were doubting Swami. There were a lot of people when Swami announced this, I guess in the larger world, there were a lot of people, skeptics, who would have thought that who will come to a village like Puttaparthi to work and, you know, first of all, how is it possible to create the logistics? Because a super specialty hospital necessarily those days in 91, it was still a remote village, right?
Yes.
So Puttaparthi was not as well connected as it is today in those days. So, but then it was a humongous task and Swami assembled a diverse team from across the continents. People work from across the continents. All India Institute of Medical Sciences, there were a dedicated team of people from AIIMS led by Professor Venugopal and Dr. Safaya. A huge planning and there were people in the multiple fronts. Today we have all these PERT charts, you know, project management charters going, and still we do a lot of things wrong, right? But I never saw any such project management document when the hospital was being built. And Swami covered all the fronts. He was building his human resources. He was getting his logistics in place. He was getting his infrastructure done. He was getting the kind of expertise and processes and systems, everything in place. And more than anything, that will, that strong will, that I have given a word and I will get it done. I think it was manifest for every one of us to see. So I guess we never had any such doubts, nor did I would again say that, you know, Colonel Joga Rao, but, you know, again, he as a representative of war would have doubted. But it was fantastic actually to just see the evolution of a hospital in such a 5.5 months kind of time frame. I don't think it has been paralleled even now. I don't think, you know, even with all the advances people make, there's still a lot of mistakes people commit in trying to get a hospital in place. Those days in 91, for a super specialty hospital, and, you know, Swami announced on November 22, on this day, that I fulfilled my word to you. Today 4 surgeries were done.
Yes.
And all of them are successful. I mean, for in 1 year flat, for so many things to happen, that's a miracle, right? And without seemingly being difficult, all those things were achieved. So that was how it all started. We all had our own individual stories in between, how we wanted to be part of this and how he allowed us to.
So tell us, what is your story?
Well, so it's, I'll go back a couple of years prior to my joining hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I was a normal engineering student, skeptical of a lot of things.
Mm.
I knew vaguely that, you know, Swami is... Satya Sai Baba was there and he's doing some work, and some of my friends had gone to Puttaparthi. I never really bothered, nor did I think I will ever come here.
Mm-hmm. So your parents were not devotees or anything like that?
Not in that sense. They used to attend the occasional bhajans, but there was never any force at home that I should do or I should go.
They were familiar, but not so, not in that sense staunch devotees or anything like
that.
Yeah,
so to say. So during my engineering, final year engineering, I was trying for management programs across, and repeatedly the advertisement of Satsai Institute was coming in front of me.
Oh.
It was like almost.
So are you getting Sanatan Sarathi at home?
No. I saw only the ad in Hindu. Those days it used to come about, I think, once or twice in the month of December, January, for a entrance in May. So my father suggested that, why don't you apply to this? I said, no, this is not an institute I am looking out. I am looking for something else. So the first time it was suggested to me, I didn't take that. But the same thing popped up in front of me in 2-3 different occasions. And after about, I guess, about 2-3 weeks, I thought, okay, let me give it a shot. Let me just apply for this institute, you know. I was pretty naive to be pretty condescending about it. Right? That, okay, let me see if I get a chance there, let me consider at that time.
Mm.
I was really, I guess, that's the arrogance of youth, or, you know, whatever you would want to call.
Mm.
And that's the naivety of being, you know, not understanding the glory, power of Swami.
Mm.
So it so happened that I applied and then I came here.
But you didn't apply anywhere else?
No, I did. I did and I didn't get anywhere else.
So slowly you are shaping up.
Yes. But then I was also, by the time I applied and wrote the exam, it had grown, the desire to come here had grown pretty strong. I didn't know why.
Mm-hmm.
But the first time I came here, Swami was not here in Puttaparthi.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Parthi for the first time.
That was like during the entrance time?
During the entrance time.
Mm.
And
so before that you had never come to Parthi?
I had never come to Parthi.
Mm.
nor did I ever attend bhajan.
But you're saying somehow that the desire to apply and come and write the entrance, that became stronger.
Absolutely.
You don't know why?
I don't know. The moment after I started, after I came, visited and gave my interviews, apparently I was not too sure that I would be selected after, you know, I did my entrance pretty okay, got cleared for group discussions and then personal interviews. But I was not very confident that I would be taken. But I was very pleasantly surprised when, you know, I got the call that, okay, you have been selected, you can come and join us on June 1st. So that's how I came and got admitted and then...
So how was it for you when you came for entrance and, you know, you were seeing Prashanti for the first time? Because I think perhaps Swami was not here at that time, right? There's
correct.
A time generally Swami is in Vrindavan or Kodaikanal.
Right.
So how was it when you first stepped into Prashanti? How was that experience?
It's a totally different ballgame. I was used to Hyderabad.
I know.
I was an engineering student. So even in 90s, you know, the engineering students had a ball. And Puttaparthi was such, it was bare.
Yeah.
I mean, the first thing you feel is it's a deserted place.
That the Swami is not there. It's summer.
In summer.
It's hot.
It's hot.
Yeah.
And we were given old hostel as accommodation. Those days, no fans.
No fans, yes.
And first time in my life, I was sleeping on floor. And the only thing I remember was everybody used to go regularly for a breakfast at 8 o'clock, lunch at 11:30, tea at 3:30 and dinner at 7 o'clock. So that was pretty, those 3 days or 2 days I was here, that was pretty strong, that impression.
Hmm.
But otherwise, I thought it was such a remote, isolated place. But that's exactly why I was attracted, I guess. I thought this is the place where I should... I can, you know, remove all the distractions of life and then contemplate on what can be, what should be the thing. Because I guess I was slightly, subsequently Swami told you had depression.
Oh, okay.
In one of the interviews.
Mm-hmm.
But I was kind of in a search mode by then.
Okay.
As to what exactly, why should we follow a mechanical pattern of studying, getting into a job, getting married, and you know, the whole lot which happens with 99% of us.
Mm.
I was kind of...
These questions were, had started coming, like there yes. should be something more to life.
Yes, almost in my final year engineering, this was what was nagging me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to take the automatic route of either writing a GRE, which 90% of my friends did, and going to US, or doing a MBA and then joining it, although that was what I was thinking all the while. But I had...
Like you are not thinking, okay, either I have to go to the US or do an MBA and join the corporate world. You didn't have that kind of a very clear line of path in terms of your career or life in front of you. You're still thinking.
I was actually questioning myself what exactly is the purpose of life. These were actually the questions I was pondering because I had become slight, I would say I was kind of skeptical about a lot of things as the structure that would be normally given to us. So I guess the inherent search kind of a thing started about 6 months to a year before I came over to Parthi. But the first impression when I saw Parthi was, yes, this is the place which will give me answers to all the questions that I am searching for.
Wow. That is something amazing.
Yeah.
Even though the Parthi was dry and hot and deserted, as you mentioned, but still you felt that this is the place where your soul will get what it is looking for.
Yes, and mind you, I still didn't know anything about Swami or that he is an incarnation of God or people look up to him as God.
Oh, okay.
I only thought that he's running a hospital, he's running an institution.
Your parents didn't tell you about who Sai Baba is before you came?
No, for us he was one of the gurus. Or rather, you know, we were not really... I don't think there was any kind of discussions, any major thing.
Mm.
It was always my choice, or so I thought. And so yes, so I came and then joined, and then it took me almost a year to comprehend even little bit of Swami's glory.
Oh.
Just to understand that, look, here is someone who is in a human form, but who is much way beyond any of us can even comprehend. So I wouldn't say I can understand him even now. I don't think I can comprehend what he is. But you realize, that realization takes place in when some of those sudden things happen. And it was almost a year before, you know, I could understand that, yes, this is nothing ordinary, this is something extraordinary, something out of the world that I have landed myself in. Otherwise, it was also another competitive place for me, where I should be working for my grades, I should be competing with others, and I should be excelling in my studies. That was the focus. Of course, I also knew that there's something beyond that we should be searching out there. So it was, I guess, in 1990, that's after my first year, that when we had the summer break, we went home and then came back, and Vrindavan, we had our industrial tour. So that is when I started very intensely longing for Swami's physical word, you know. Otherwise, until then, there was no such major thing that he should speak to me, he should look at me, and all such things. Although that's what I used to wonder, why everybody is after that. You know, they know that he can do anything even without looking at, even without doing things. But then, anyway, so the usual, that angst kind of a thing started in that summer thing, summertime.
After your first year.
After my first
year. During the first year, can I ask you, you know, what are the things that you saw in Swami? You know, because I guess you must be observing him very closely, right? Because he's something very, very new, something very different than probably what you had thought or imagined. So, and you must be keenly seeing him, keenly noticing everything that he does, keenly observing what he's saying, what he's doing. So, how was it in that first year? What were the occasions when you thought, no, this person is not what I had thought. This person is something beyond. This person is something little more than ordinary. What were those occasions when you started getting those feelings?
I guess it's a cumulative. I don't think it's one or two such things. Although, you know, see, the hostel is a beautiful place.
Yes.
Where you get to stay with people from different classes. Classes, I mean, you know, somebody is studying BSc, somebody is doing his MSc, somebody is doing PhD. And I was very fortunate to be placed in the rooms where people were either, you know, people had come from different parts of the country. They were staying here for quite some time. So the discussions, unlike what I heard in Hyderabad, were something totally different here. The discussions were all about, you know, this is what Swami did today. This is what Swami wants us to do. This is how we should be. This is what will impress Swami. This is what will bring us close to Swami. So that dominated most of the time. Of course, people were still bothered about their studies and then, you know, sports. And we used to have regularly, even for the hostel, the visits from, you know, Mr. Chakravarti and Mr. Nanjundai Garu. So these people used to come in the evenings and
they
make rounds.
Controller then.
Yeah, they were registrar and controller at that time, and occasionally VC used to drop in. So hostel was something, it was an extension of our university studies.
Yes.
Of course, Mandir was a great eye-opener too. So, yeah, so when you're in such proximity and then hearing about, and then, you know, I also had a lot of curiosity. I started reading up a lot of books
about
to understand Swami's life earlier and how it came about and all that. So I had a kind of a awe and respect, but I don't think it was faith in the first instance itself. There was still the questioning mind, there was still the doubting mind. That maybe, you know, it's all, there is still some chance. But then there were a couple of personal experiences which changed that entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then when you accept that Swami is God and He can do anything, that acceptance was complete with me. There were no half measures.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that if it's possible for Swami to do this, then anything is possible for Him. Everything is possible for Him.
So these personal experiences happened after first year?
I would say during the course of first year or somewhere at the end of first year of my studies. So, but then, you see, when Swami touches you, when the moment He embraces you, both literally and figuratively, your entire perspective changes. There is a total shake-up, shake-down, so to say, in the way you think and look things. So even after all these things, like in Vrindavan, you know, the first year after Vrindavan, we were in, summer course had started, and after summer course we came back to Puttaparthi, and that's when Swami started speaking to me. He announced the results of first year MBA, and then I was third or fourth in the class.
Mm-hmm.
So he also called out my name and said, you have also scored or something like that. But then that's it. So I was thinking, oh, you need so much, you know, we expect so much more that we should be. And slowly he started talking, and then that's when
So at this stage of your life, what was your mindset in terms of accepting Bhagwan? By the time, I mean, you always had respect, you said, because having, you know, lived in the hostel and heard the discussions and read so many books. So at this stage when Bhagwan started speaking to you, did you have faith, or you still were a questioning mind, or he had begun, the acceptance has already begun?
I would guess, you know, see, the thing is, when I say acceptance, accepting 100% that he is whole and soul for me, that would have happened around that time. But when that respect comes, when you see that he is an embodiment of truth, he is an embodiment of power which comes out of that love, he is an embodiment of grace. You see so many instances happening around you, you see some of your own questions being answered silently. You see, you experience that omnipresence of His. So I guess the acceptance started much longer ago. And so I would say it only needed Swami just to say that, hey, what are you still pretending, man? You are, you know. And so, yes, so all the pretenses fell, and once he started speaking, like I said, I still remember my father coming and telling me, you know, you have written a very, those days, we still had to write letters to parents, you know, the STD was not there, forget about emails and all.
Yeah.
So even STD was not there, and so the communication was mostly through regular snail mail, as we call it today.
Yeah.
So my dad came sometime in July or August of 90, and then told that you've written a very difficult, different letter saying that, you know, your perspectives have changed, your entire world has turned upside down. What is it, or what has happened? So that was because, you know, Swami had taken me closer to Him and then shown exactly who I am and who He is, and what is to be done if we have to cross from I to V. So, you know, from that being a very selfish, immature youngster to what he expects his students to be. So, I thought, wow. So, it's like, I was in doldrums for a couple of days the moment after he revealed a lot of things in a personal interview I had with him. It was like a total revelation about, you know, I'm sure each one of us have undergone this. Each one of us have personally experienced when Swami touches you, when He reveals who He is or who you are, and how we are related. So I guess That's the state of mind at that time, that I thought, okay, you know, this is it, this is what I should be doing in my life. So I guess I must have written some such thing to my dad, so they were pretty worried to come back and ask me what has happened. So, of course,
I think all they want is it something for good?
Absolutely, absolutely. See, the... See, with Swami, every single act of His, every single word of His, He's only nudging us towards the path of divinity.
No, what I'm saying is your parents would have thought, what has happened to him? He's saying everything has changed. Is he all right?
But yes, of course, no, that's the way you would probably,
get concerned.
But then, you know, Swami is such a graceful mother to all of us. So He took my parents into the regular thing, and then He spoke to them a lot. He spoke to me a lot during my second year. There were a lot of occasions where He hinted that if I want, I can choose a different life, but it's all in my hands. At least I was given to think that it's my choice. Actually, it's not our choice. I guess it's all ordained by
yes.
Him.
Yes.
But then, He gave these occasional glimpses that, look, it's your choice. Basically, if you want to you walk the path I'm showing you, you have this choice. Either you go there or you go this way. So all the time, He never overtly pushed any of us into any of the things.
Yeah, absolutely.
So He always gave us the choice. He was always the guidepost.
Yes.
So to say, telling that you have to walk.
Yeah. You have to decide on the walk.
Yeah. I can only show you the path. But
yes.
But then, I don't think he abandoned us anywhere, anytime.
Yes.
In any sense. So if you had chosen to walk a different path, He said, fine, I'll be with you. I'm there with you.
Yes.
And that support was something tremendous. So not many would imagine that, you know, whatever we would want to do, the way it turned out later on. But with His grace, it was all pretty natural for us that, you know, there are five of my classmates who were given the choice of working in the hospital. And that was a pretty difficult decision in a couple of days to happen. But Swami had ensured that it's our choice and we feel good about it, and He supported all through. And going to Delhi for about 6 months for training.
6 months you were in Delhi?
Actually, 4 months.
In AIIMS?
Yeah, we spent almost a month and a half here in between. So
okay.
We went to AIIMS for about 2 months, came back, spent about a month here, and again went back to finish the training.
Okay. So in the All India Institute of Medical Sciences.
Correct. So that was a prelude to the hospital starting. So five of us, we had the great opportunity of going to AIIMS. And it was...
And you had no background, actually, isn't it? In anything to do with medicine. You did your engineering and then your management.
Absolutely. And...
What were you doing in AIIMS?
So the very first day, we were taken and there was an open heart surgery going on. And four of us were crowding around the patient. And all of us were looking at a heart for the first time. And one of us actually fainted.
Oh my God. See all the blood and all that.
Yes. So he fell down on the floor and he was taken to the... So that's how...
Oh my God.
So that's how Anil got into OPD.
Okay. He cannot see blood.
So I was engineering background. They said, okay, you know. So biosciences background students were taken for operating room.
Okay.
I was kind of left with the other choice of working in cardiology.
Okay.
So got trained in cath lab.
It was such a great feeling when Sai looked at me with inquisitive eyes. It was the first time he had seen his own mother. It was like my son had been born again.
We could not believe our ears when we learned that in Baba's hospital, even complex surgeries are done absolutely free of cost.
I have no words to express my gratitude, what they've done.
Yes, I had always believed in God, but you all know that was the God whom I had never seen. After coming here, I now believe in a God whom I have not only seen, but also experienced.
Medical Marvels of Love is our weekly radio series in which we bring you patient profiles from India's top-of-the-line super speciality hospitals, often referred to as modern temples of healing. The Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences, located at Whitefield, Bangalore, and Prashantigram in Puttaparthi. You can listen to this on Asia stream of Radio Sai every Sunday at 8 p.m. To know about the timings of this weekly series, Medical Marvels of Love on other streams of Radio Sai, please go to the schedule page of our website radiosai.org. You can also download and listen to this at your leisure by visiting the link radiosai.org/medical. Thank you and happy listening. Sai Ram.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
The 90th year of Bhagwan Baba's divine advent is here. What are you planning to offer at his lotus feet? How about a gift wrapped in red? If you wish to partner with the Sai Healthcare to save a precious life, please take the time to donate blood at the Sri Satya Sai Super Specialty Hospital whenever you are visiting Puttaparthi. The blood bank is open Monday through Saturday, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Every single day, patients undergo life-saving procedures here, and a pint of blood can make all the difference. Let's build a favorable blood inventory. If you're a healthy adult, please donate. For more information, please visit psg.sssihms.org.in. Blood, it's in you to give. Please donate. Sai Ram.